This program is brought to you by Emory University.
This book report is brought to you by Emory Report.
I'm reading from a chapter written by Melissa Kane about the desegregation of Emory, titled National Ambition, Regional Turmoil. The idea of the university as an oasis set apart from the daily concerns of the world has had a very long life. It still thrives today, along with the image of the absent-minded scholar, oblivious to the real world. While these stereotypes may contain an element of truth, in most important ways universities are closely bound to the world around them. All universities, including Emory, evolve as part of their communities. And nowhere is this more evident than in the long and tumultuous run-up to Emory's 1962 decision to admit black students. Beginning in the mid-1940s, Emory struggled to adapt its goals, its traditions, and its very sense of identity to a new and sometimes unclear set of demands. The story of that struggle reveals Emory's profound connection to its local, regional, and national communities. In the wake of World War II, all those communities were undergoing deep and rapid change. Nationally, the Cold War with the Soviet Union rose to paramount importance, and in the propaganda battle for the loyalties of Africa, Asia, and Latin America, the racial discrimination practiced in the U.S. South was a serious handicap. At the same time, the South itself was being transformed, economically, socially, demographically, in some ways more thoroughly than it had been by the Civil War. Widespread mechanization of agriculture fed migration from the countryside to the cities. Newly created manufacturing jobs and employment opportunities in government and defense contracting enabled growing numbers of blacks and whites to reach middle-class prosperity. Primary and secondary education improved steadily. Meanwhile, American higher education was undergoing its own transformation. Scientists and engineers, most based in universities, had been crucial to the war effort. The Cold War only deepened the understanding that American national security depended on a strong university research community. A new commitment arose on the part of the federal government to expansion and democratization of universities, mainly through funding of graduate studies, research, and the GI Bill. The greatly increased flow of money from these sources created a wholly new set of opportunities and pressures. At Emory, as at other universities in the rapidly changing South, this development, although welcome, was fraught with difficulties. Emory had begun its existence as a small Methodist college in Oxford, Georgia. It was, of course, for whites only. Like almost all Southern schools of that era, it focused on teaching a classical curriculum and Christian doctrine to undergraduates. It also served a powerful social purpose, carefully bringing young men, and in the 20th century, women, into membership in the society of respectable adults and anchoring them in the region's traditions. After the Methodist Episcopal Church South, smarting from its acrimonious split with Vanderbilt University, decided to launch a new Methodist institution of higher education, Emory was relocated to Atlanta, given slightly more resources, enlarged by the addition of professional schools, and christened a university. Progress toward true university standing, however, was slow. Building a significant program of graduate studies and research was difficult. Until 1946, Emory offered no work toward the doctorate and limited work at the master's level. At the end of the war, it still remained a thoroughly conservative regional school, serving mainly undergraduates from Georgia and Florida, a creature of its time and place. With the ongoing transformation of traditional Southern life, though, and the outpouring of new money for education, change was clearly coming to Emory. The struggle that would occupy its leadership for a decade and a half was how to shape that change, or at least keep it under control. University presidents are never simply free to do what they think best. Even under normal conditions, they are answerable to an unreasonably large number of constituencies: trustees, faculty, alumni, politicians, donors, students, neighbors, parents, and more. These groups are often deeply devoted to and passionate about their school, and they often disagree strongly with each other about what is best for it. At Emory in the post-war era, where deeply held beliefs and long-cherished ways of life were eroding, and plans to remake the university were taking shape, the divisions became intense. Opposition, based on respect for Southern traditions, grew in proportion to the scope and pace of change. This intertwined change required two Emory presidents, Goodrich White and Walter Martin, to perform subtle and intricate balancing acts. To navigate forward in the university's best interests, they had to cope with factors ranging from national foreign policy to the expectations of philanthropic foundations to the intricacies of personal relationships with their friends in the Emory community. In particular, the university's response to growing pressures for racial change was shaped in the cauldron of the intense politics of segregation that played out in Georgia in the decades after the war.
The preceding program is copyrighted by Emory University. Please visit us at emory.edu.